Hi, my name is Tom Sinton. I'm the proprietor of Starfield Vineyards. Our website is starfieldvineyards.com, and we produce cool climate Cabernet and Merlot from the Napa Valley. And I invite you to learn more about us. Join one of our two great wine clubs.
Thank you for listening to iWine Radio. I'm Lynn Crelo Chamberlain. Welcome to Wine and Dine. Today we have the pleasure of meeting the founder of Starfield Vineyards, Tom Sinton, who has a very interesting historical link to the history of winemaking in California, in Napa in particular. Starfield Vineyards was founded along with his son Rob on this idea of sourcing wine grapes from cool vineyard sites in premier wine growing regions. And right now there are five wines, to my knowledge, that are available that you can purchase. Three of them are from Napa Valley, and two of them are from Bordeaux, as a matter of fact. And we're going to learn all about that. Tom, thank you so very much for your time this week.
Thank you for having me, Lynn.
So I want to start by asking you if you would please share with listeners your history and that connection with Napa Valley and Louis Martini, right? The Louis Martini family.
Well, we do have a long history in the family going back to 1919 when my grandfather went a lark with some partners right after the Volstead Act was passed, which inaugurated Prohibition, decided to buy a large winery in Kingsburg over near Fresno. And their idea was kind of a crazy idea, was to make wine bricks. And so he was not the only one who did this, but they did make wine bricks, and they marketed them across the country with had a sign that on them that said, "Danger, do not add water, may ferment."
I love it. It's so ingenious.
Yeah, so it was a crazy idea. So he had this very large winery over in Kingsburg, and it didn't turn out, economically, it didn't turn out to be a great idea. And I think because Italian Americans in the East Coast and all could actually buy grapes and make wine, and so they didn't need wine bricks. So in 1924, he changed direction and decided he had a problem with the winemaking technique, and he decided to hire a winemaker. And he ultimately ended up partnering with Louis Martini, and this was the Louis M. Martini who later founded the winery in Napa. And Louis moved down to Fresno, to Kingsburg, to run the winery, and they ran it for 12 years during Prohibition and after, and made sacramental wines.
Okay.
And that's where the Martinis got to know the Gallos, growing up in the valley. And then in 1936, after Prohibition was repealed, they got a chance to... the Bank of America had financed lots of grapes and needed to find a home for the grapes, and they had the largest winery in the state. And so the bank bought it, and that gave Louis the money to start his winery up in Napa Valley. So that was the first foray into the wine business. It lasted over a dozen years. So
what did your grandfather do then after he sold the winery? What direction did he go?
Well, we had a ranch ranches in San Luis Obispo County, and so he continued to run those ranches. And then after I got out of college in 1972, I planted a vineyard on one of those ranches in the Paso Robles area, which is still operating today. So that was my second foray into the wine business, and I ran that for a dozen years, pretty much as a farmer. And was one of the early grape growers in the Paso Robles area.
Did you hang out with your grandfather when you were a kid?
I did not. I got these stories from my father and uncle.
Okay.
And they love telling the stories because they're so much fun. And my uncle was a great friend of Louis P. Martini, and I actually got Louis P.'s advice when I planted the vineyard down in Paso Robles as to what varieties he would plant. And so I planted what he suggested.
And you're still using those grapes now, or you're selling those grapes?
I sold my part of the vineyard, but the part I planted for my uncle is still there. They sell the grapes across the state, and they make a Petite Syrah that's pretty nice called Shell Creek Vineyards, which was a name I gave the winery back in the 1970s.
And so now we've talked about the past. Let's briefly talk about the future, in that you have property in the Sierra foothills.
Well, we have what we've done is we did, when I finished a career in computer services in the 2008 or 9 era, I wanted to go back to wine and to grapes and to all this, because I do have a degree from a master's degree from UC Davis in viticulture and enology.
Oh.
And so I've loved this forever, and I got a chance to do it, and I wanted to make this, start out making the best possible wine I could, given everything I've learned, you know, farming vineyards and studying it. And so we started in Napa with Cabernet and Merlot, which is, I think, in California, that's, you know, probably the best place to start if you want to challenge yourself. And we did that. And so that's the focus of the wines that we've got now.
Okay.
And then as far as the Sierra foothills, I wanted to get to your point. We did buy a piece of property in the Sierra foothills for some of the same reasons we selected vineyards in Napa, because we wanted a chance to see if we could produce our own what we call a star field. So it's the name of the label, which is an optimal place where you can get optimal ripening of grapes. And of course, the grapes up in the Sierra foothills that we're growing are totally different from Cabernet. We're not growing Cabernet Merlot.
Yeah, I'm sure. I am so struck on this idea that's so interesting, that you not only are making wines for Starfield Vineyards from Napa, Cabernet and a Cabernet Merlot blend and a Sauvignon Blanc, but also Bordeaux. How did this connection come about? Or you just, knew?
So in the Napa grapes, I'm I hold the belief that, well, I love winemaking, and it's important, and you can do a lot. 80 to 90% of the quality of the what's going to be in the bottle is out there in the vineyard for you to take advantage of. So you have to have a great vineyard site. So we chose Napa. It was we looked for cool climate sites. We looked for hillsides. We looked for great viticulture. And then this is Cabernet Merlot. And then I got a chance to make a little bit of wine in Bordeaux. And I said, it's crazy not to do this, because where better to experiment with Cabernet Merlot, basically, in the places where, you know, the cultivation of those varieties originated. And they are cooler areas than Napa, typically. And so we wanted to try to do it there to see whether we could improve the Napa wines, and just to see what could we accomplish in Bordeaux, and what do people in Bordeaux know that we needed to know to make great wine.
So you actually made your wine, just so people understand, it's not like you had grapes shipped over from Bordeaux. You actually make your wine in Bordeaux and then bottle it and sell it, bottled there even and shipped over then.
It's made in Bordeaux, it's bottled and shipped over. In the first year, the 2011s were made at Chateau Tessier, which is Jonathan Malthus's property in Saint-Emilion, and the 2012s are made at Chateau Lynch-Bage.
Holy moly.
So, and I have learned a tremendous amount from that experience of making wine over there, and I think it's definitely fun to taste the wines and compare, because this is the best wine we could make in Bordeaux in these years and the best wine we could make in Napa. So and there's not a lot of the Bordeaux wine. I don't think from a marketing standpoint, it's never been our intention to make be a big importer of Bordeaux wine. But it certainly has helped our overall winemaking skills, and I think it's some pretty nice wine, too.
Is we're almost out of time with this segment here, but I just want to start this idea of is the culture of managing a vineyard different from it is the perspective than in Napa, or are they kind of parallel each other?
Well, I think that yes and no. The culture of managing a vineyard is it's similar, but it's different. It's a very different climate in Bordeaux. You have many more weather problems to deal with, and Bordeaux vineyards are organized around dealing with those problems.
Wow. Yes, yes. Okay. From a business perspective, I want to ask you that when we come back, how the business of making wine is in Bordeaux compared to Napa. We're going to go to a short break here, and when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Tom Sinton, who is the founder, along with his son, Rob, of Starfield Vineyards. We will be right back.
Hi, my name is Keon Tavacoli, specializing in Bordeaux varieties like Cabernet and Merlot.
iWine Radio is a production of Food Tastes Better with Wine on the web at iWineRadio.com.
I'm Lynn Crelo Chamberlain.
Welcome to Wine and Dine.
I understand from an email from a Napa winery that Robert Parker is going to be in Napa in the next couple of weeks, and they're setting up big tasting for him. So wineries have to submit their samples for tasting. And, you know, Tom Sinton, our guest that we're continuing with from Starfield, you're spending time in Bordeaux. You're learning about the culture of growing grapes and making wine in Bordeaux, but there's so much of the business of winemaking in Bordeaux, and Robert Parker certainly influenced that history. What do you think about the mindset? I would think that the French are, and I'm an outsider, I've never done what you've done, so I have no experience to fall back on. But do they really approach it from a business perspective, or is it more from a farming perspective?
Well, I think, of course, both. The answer to that is both. And I don't, the Bordeaux system is a unique system in the world. It was set up, it was in effect a province of Britain for many years, and the British left a négociant system in place that the French have really exploited, and it's really kind of a really nice system for getting those wines to market. What Robert, Parker, some people love him or hate him or whatever, but he has influenced the Bordeaux wine industry, and I think in many ways in a good way, because it's very difficult in Bordeaux because of the weather problems to get consistently ripe grapes, and Robert Parker likes ripe grapes,
yeah.
And so he's pushed the Bordeaux industry to things like sorting tables and selection and
lower yields, maybe even
lower yields to get a riper type of wine out of Bordeaux. And I think that's actually been a good thing for Bordeaux. I think those techniques are good, and you know, when you go to Napa, it's much easier to ripen the fruit consistently.
So you have from California, from Napa Valley, your flagship wine is the Star Beam Napa Valley Cabernet, and so talk to us about this, and I love the name Star Beam also.
Oh, thank you. That's from a Lord Byron poem, Manfred, which is on a star beam I have ridden. So a diversion there, but it's a kind of a fun fact. But the star, our view about how you make great wine anywhere is to get it into the coolest region that you can, where the grapes still ripen adequately. So you obviously don't put Cabernet and a Pinot region because they wouldn't get ripe. But so we're clustered around the city of Napa in the Napa Valley, and it's the we always have part of the base wine comes from Coombsville, which is just east of the city of Napa, and that gives that allows you to have a very long hang time. It allows the seeds to ripen properly, so they have a woody shell, so the tannins are softer, and you get this optimal rich flavor and a rich texture in that wine that's really unique, and that's the Starbeam is our best expression of that every year. And in 2011 was a very cool year in Napa. We harvested a lot of those grapes November 11th, I remember it well, which was later than quite a bit later than the grapes were harvested in Bordeaux.
Okay. Makes sense.
So that's our flagship wine. It's from the it's a hillside. Why do we like hillsides? The soil's poorer. It's easier. The grape has to can't put as much in vegetative growth. Has to put more in berry development, and it allows you to have smaller berries. So, and smaller berries are, you know, as I'm sure you know, a lot of the flavor and the, certainly the anthocyanin and the color is in the very thin outer layer of the skin. So getting a smaller berry is going to give you a much more intense wine, which is what we're looking for.
So where do you physically make your wine in Napa?
We've been making it over at Folio Winery, which is just off the Napa-Sonoma Road, and was, till recently, Michael Mondavi's family winery.
Yeah, I read that. And you and Kian Tevacoli consults with you on your Napa wines.
Kian does. He's done a wonderful job. He's worked with many of these vineyards for years now, and so he's got an innate sense of how the wines need to come together from a blending perspective, and just from a production perspective. So he's done a fabulous job.
I love the fact that you are giving recommendations on temperature in particular, what temperature to be serving your wines at and decanting your reds. A lot of time, I mean, I am on the East Coast, North Carolina. It is hot and humid, and the idea of having a red wine in the summer at room temperature is gross. And I love the fact that you're actually coming out and stating that you refrigerate them, especially after you open them. Don't leave them on the counter.
Well, this is a maybe a peculiar quirk of mine. I don't know. I've drunk wine for many, many years, and I like to put the red wine in the refrigerator after it's opened. I like to pull it right out of the cellar at 55 degrees and pour it, and then I'll put it back in the refrigerator. And I think it's great. I don't have a problem with that. I think it's sometimes wine is a little too fussy. People are there's too much mystique about it, and every wine has a story. It has an ideal temperature that it could be served at. So if it's a very, you know, if it were like a Chablis, a white wine, well, you probably want to warm that with a high level of acidity. You probably want to warm that Chablis up. If it's a rich barrel fermented Sauvignon Blanc or Chardonnay, maybe you want to serve that more chilled. Mm. So you can really enhance. I believe you can really enhance the flavor of the wine by doing these things. And I don't think in North Carolina, certainly, I would serve the red wines cooler than I would somewhere else.
I mean, people aren't drinking orange juice at room temperature, so considering the fact that wine is basically grape juice fermented, why not serve it cool? So last question here before we run out of time. Is your Sauvignon Blanc, in fact, barrel fermented, as you say?
The Sauvignon Blanc is barrel fermented, and so okay. We wanted to not compete with New Zealand Sauvignon Blancs, but provide a kind of a richer, more tropical fruit style Sauvignon Blanc, and it benefits from being served well chilled.
Mm. And this is Napa Valley. 2013 is the current vintage, and the vintage on the two Bordeaux wines is 2011. Cuvée à droite from the Saint-Emilion and Cuvée à gauche from Medoc, so right bank, left bank. And now, what's the website address so people can go where they can go and learn more?
www.starfieldvineyards.com.
And do you have a wine club?
We do have a wine club. We have two wine clubs, the Founders Club and the Exploration. Founders Club is a case a year, and the Exploration is six bottles, and that's the best way to buy our wine.
Tom Sinton, this has been such a pleasure meeting you this week on Wine and Dine. Thank you for telling us all about Starfield Vineyards.
Thank you, Lynn, for having me on your show.
We will have links up for you to learn more.
You're listening to iWine Radio.